to our portion of our town here today. I'm Wayne Sharp, and I'm with Judy Fliegel. You're going to learn a lot about Judy. I came across her a few times over the years, and very, very interesting person. And first thing I'm going to start with, welcome, Judy.
Thank you, and thank you for asking me.
Yeah, well, I'm glad to have you on the air with us as well, with our town here. Now, let's, first of all, get to know you a little bit. Tell me a little bit about your background.
Well, I've lived here now for almost 41 years. But before that, I came from California. I know, I came from California.
That other country, yeah.
And I lived in the San Francisco Bay Area, Los Gatos in particular. And I taught second grade for 5 years and first grade for 17 years in the Los Gatos Elementary School District. And I thought I would teach forever. I thought that's all I would ever do. Then my late husband became ill, and he needed to sort of retire. So we did and moved up to Florence. But I was only 40-something. I wasn't ready to retire. So I ended up taking a class at LCC, mm-hmm. and in creative writing, and after sending in a few stories to Oregon Coast Magazine, they hired me as an editor.
Yeah, and that was with Alicia Spooner and Rob Spooner.
Absolutely. Right. Mm-hmm. And back in 1989, I think. Mm-hmm. And then I worked for them for 21 years.
Wow.
And that's where I learned to write. Mm-hmm. When you have a deadline and someone comes in and says, or your boss comes in and says, I need a little story about such and such in 4 hours, you do it. You don't have time to have writer's block. You end up writing. And so with that as a background, that was how I learned to write. So since I left the magazine, I've been writing a blog post every Friday for 15 years.
Okay.
And I've written 7 books. 3 of those books are a result of my blog posts. And so, you know, I enjoy doing a blog each week. It means I have a deadline each week, but it fulfills my need to write. And writing is like any other skill. If you don't practice it, you lose it.
But, you know, the other thing, too, Judy, is it takes a lot of research to write. I mean, you can't just put stuff out there unless it's fiction. That's make-believe. But when you deal with a lot of things that are factual in your writing, so how many hours of research do you do, let's say, on one particular book? We'll talk about some of your individual books in a few moments. But just when you're doing research, where do you do it and how do you do it?
Well, that's a very good question, and things have changed over the years. When I worked at the magazines and did research, you know, we went to the library, we went to the newspaper offices. But now you can go online, and you can learn almost anything about anything. You have to find more than one source to make sure that you've got something that's accurate, mm-hmm. you know, and so anyway, I was doing a little deal I was explaining to somebody how I write my blog post every week. And before I start writing, I think about whether the idea, and the same goes true for books, does the idea have legs, have merit? Does it? All my books are nonfiction. So then I think it through, and if I decide it's going to work, then I see if I have photo. All my books have photos. So I see if there's enough photos in there. And then I do some research and learn. And then after all of that, I decide whether I really want to continue going ahead. And if I've got the photos, if there's enough research, if it's what I'm looking for, then I start writing. Hmm. And when I first put my first draft of anything, you know, it's like I call it my creative vomit. And then my favorite part of writing is going back and cleaning it up and making it shine, making it the way I want it. And you can also overdo that. There's a point where you shouldn't keep going or you lose the spontaneity of your writing. But anyway, that's kind of how I write. And I learned how to write working for the magazines.
Right, sure. Okay, so you learned on the job. Sometimes that's the best way to learn something because you have to get it done. Okay, let's go into some of your particular books. I know my wife is like the first one I'm going to talk about. I haven't had a chance to read it yet, but I purchased it from you not too long ago. And it's the two bridge books. Tell me about the bridge books and how you, man, that had to take a lot of work to get, like you said, everything has to be accurate. It can't
yes.
just be an assumption.
Yes.
So tell me about those books.
Okay, I'll start with the first one, Crossings, McCullough's Coastal Bridges. Way back in about 2007, 2008, Dick Smith kept bugging me. Dick Smith, mm-hmm. one of our...
Great guy.
And he was very good at getting people to do things. He was very good at delegating also. Well, he had put together a program about the bridges that he had given to a men's group, and he had done a lot of research, and he wanted me to put his research into a book. And for 2 years, I put him off. And then finally, one day, I said, okay. And I left. That was about the time that I left the magazine. And for 1 year, I worked on putting his research into a book. And I cussed him out more than once during that time. But it turned out to be a really good book, and it's now in the research section of the Knight Library at the University of Oregon. So it's the one I'm most proud of. But I spent 1 year working all day, every day on that book. And he had done a lot of the research, but I did a whole lot more.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense that you have to do it that way. So
yeah.
Now, when it comes to the bridge books, they're like, let's talk about our bridge here in Florence.
Yeah.
What do you know about it?
A lady came in. I'm a docent at the museum here in town, and a lady came in one day and said, can somebody tell me about that bridge? It was really a pretty bridge. And I said, I can give you the 5-minute version. I can give you the half hour version.
Sure.
Or I can talk all day about that bridge. And she said, 5 minutes is plenty. But anyway, that bridge best represents McCullough's genius at design. It not only is technical because it opens, it's beautiful with all of its art deco decorations. McCullough wanted his bridges to be efficient, economical, and elegant. And it's the elegant that's withstood the test of time. There are always people walking across it, admiring it, taking photos, painting it, photographing it. And that's true with the rest of his bridges on the coast, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because he has quite a few bridges. I think this bridge, and you can correct me, was it 1936 or something like that? Or?
It was designed in 1933 along with all the other major bridges on the coast. And then they were built between 1934 and 36.
Right. There you go.
And from 36 until 2010, it operated on a manual system where you had two people come in on either side, and the bridge, each side operated independent of the other, and it went up as they tapped buttons, certain buttons. And that's how it worked from 1936 until 2010. Mm. And at that point, the bridge went through quite a bit of renovation, one of which was upgrading that system to a computerized system where you could have one person on either side or even remotely operate the bridge. And it went up like one cohesive unit instead of two separate bridges. Mm-hmm. And so that bridge is still doing its job, and it's been opened in 1936, and it's of course it's my favorite bridge of McCullough's bridges.
Yeah, sure. Well, all of us enjoy it. I can't tell you how many pictures have been taken of that bridge. All right, your bestseller though. Well, first of all, let's go to the and give me a concise history of Florence that you have written about.
The history book that I have is called Around Florence, and it's with the Arcadia Publishing Company, and it's a history of Florence from 1876 on to the present.
Okay. And what's the title of it?
Around Florence.
Around Florence. Okay.
Yes.
Simple title.
Simple title. And it covers the whole area, not just Florence.
I want that book.
I'll
buy it. I'm not saying to give it to me.
I've got a copy with me.
Do you? Yeah. Because, you know, I love the history. I like knowing history that's around us when where we live. All right. Now, the bestseller, The Oregon Coast Guide to the Unexpected. What's that about?
Well, let me give you the title plus the subtitle. It's okay. Called The Oregon Coast Guide to the Unexpected, That Which Is Odd, Unusual, and Quirky.
Oh, okay.
You put words like odd and quirky on a title, people buy it. Mm. I don't know what it says about our society, but people buy it.
Well, we want to know the odd. We want to know that.
Yeah, and so this book is a guide. It takes you down the coast, interesting spot, unexpected spot to unexpected spot. I mean, there'll be places there that you recognize, but there'll be something about it that's totally unexpected. For example, the Astoria Column in Astoria mm-hmm. has a connection to the Roman Empire. Hmm. Most people don't realize that. The town of Gearhart shares its space with a whole herd of elk, at least 70, and they will invade your yard. They will stop traffic. They will even stop traffic on nearby 101. Mm-hmm. It's a major problem, but it's also a tourist attraction.
Can't somebody train those elk?
Yeah, sure.
They're pretty much going to do what they want to do, aren't they?
So anyway, there are 26 places that are totally unexpected, and people find the book fascinating, and I really have a hard time keeping it in stock.
Mm-hmm.
It's my bestseller.
It sounds great. All right, and let's see here. We got a few minutes left here. Let's skip down to your latest projects. What are you working on?
My latest project are 30 books, all meant to be read in one sitting. So each book is like 25 to 40 pages, and it's intended for people with short-term memory loss. Mm. These books were inspired by my sister, who has been diagnosed with Lewy body dementia a couple of years ago. She was a librarian who read all the time. But since her diagnosis, and she's just gradually gotten away from reading, and she doesn't read for pleasure at all anymore. And so these books are the size of a sheet of copy paper, 8.5 by 11. They have a spiral binding, so you can open the book and lay it flat. You don't even have to hang on to it to read it. Every sentence is isolated. Every page that has text on it the accompanying page next to it is a photo that relates to it. That same format is throughout every page, every book. You have text, photo, turn the page, text, photo. And so it's consistent, it's simplified, but it is not dumbed down. The stories are the same stories that have been in a lot of my blog posts. A couple of them have come from magazine articles I've written over the years. They come from many sources, but they are not dumbed down. I have to emphasize that. Mm-hmm. But they are simplified in format. It's very uncluttered. You have wide margins, big print, spaces between every sentence. It makes it easier for people with short-term memory loss to concentrate on it.
So that's the specific reason you put those together. Was for
absolutely. Mm-hmm. And they also come in, there's 30 of them, and interesting topics. Some are about history, some are about the coast, some are about traveling, some are just humorous. I have two versions. I have the version for the public, which has a vinyl cover front and back, but inside is just, it's the paper. But I also have a version for memory care, senior centers, assisted living, where more than one person will be reading them. And that version, every single page is laminated.
Hmm.
And I am the proud owner.
That's a lot of work.
Yes, of a laminating machine and a punch coil machine. And what else I have? Oh, yeah, I had to get a second printer because all of these books have heavier paper than regular copy paper. Mm-hmm. And when you print on both sides on a regular machine, it made all kinds of shadow printing. So I had to get a heavier duty printer. And so anyway, I do everything on these books. I print them, I publish them, I get them all ready to go. If I sell one, I make one.
Oh, really? Is that how you do it? So,
yeah.
And are you still creating new stories for them?
Every week I write a new blog post, mm-hmm, about something.
How do we find that blog post?
Oh, my blog is at crossingsauthor.com.
Okay, crossings with an S, crossings?
Yep. Crossingsauthor.com.
Okay, I want to search that out. You're very interesting. You're a very interesting person. I'm telling you that right now. Okay, so you got 30 books of those. We're going to have to wrap it up. And tell me something that you want me to know that maybe our listeners need to know about you and how we can wrap up the show here, part of our town.
Well, one of the things I've always wanted to encourage older people, senior citizens, mm-hmm, is that just because you're retired doesn't mean you have to retire from life. There is so much to do. You can then do what you want to do. You can volunteer. I volunteer at the museum, and I have for 24 years. 24 years.
Yeah, crazy.
I think any day they're going to put a label on me, stick me in the corner, and put a sign there that says, we just couldn't get rid of her.
This is Judy Flegel. Right?
And when I finished Crossings, my first major book, I wrote 6 books after that, and I would not have written them if I hadn't written that first one. And I was 70 when I finished that first one.
Wow.
So in the last 15 years, I've written 6 books. And I thoroughly enjoy writing. I feel that every week I write my blog post to keep myself in practice because writing is a skill.
Yeah.
You don't practice it, you lose it.
Yeah, okay. Judy, well, we're going to have to wrap it up. I really enjoy you and enjoy hearing what you've done and seeing what you've written and everything. And congratulations. And I love that. I love that encouragement, that exhortation in a way of, you know, just because you're older doesn't mean that you can't be doing something that you really enjoy to do.
Exactly.
And be creative.
Exactly.
Yeah, and be creative. All right, Judy, thank you very much for being part of our town.
And thank you so much for asking me.
Now, that's Judy Flegel, and you can meet her personally right there at the Siusa Public You can meet her personally at the Siusa Pioneer Museum. And what days are you there?
I'm there on Thursdays. Thursday from noon to 4.
Okay, you can meet her on a Thursday at the Siusa Pioneer Museum on Maple Street, Thursdays. There, okay. Judy, thank you very much. You're listening to Our Town on KCST.
And that'll do it for the June edition. Thank you so much for tuning in. Tune in again next time right here on Coast Radio for Our Town.